Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Community in Depth, and we are thrilled to have on the phone with us Matt Carter. He is the Executive Director of the Dakota County Historical Society, and we are also joined today by Maria Terrace, who is a Dakota County Board Member of the Historical Society. So really nice to chat with both of you. How have you been?
Good, Mo. It's so good to talk with you, too.
Thank you. Matt, let's start with you, please. I know that the Dakota County Historical Society is made up of three distinct sites. Can you tell us about those three sites, please, and what each one entails?
Yeah, so our organization was founded in 1939, and since then, we've expanded to, as you said, three different sites within Dakota County. So our headquarters is the Washoe Museum, and that one's located in South St. Paul. So that we're open right now at that location. Most of what we have coming through for visitors are researchers that during COVID have had a lot of downtime, so they've been able to track down some family information. And now that we're open, they're able to come in and use our archive and our research library to go through and get some additional information to help with their research there. We also have our exhibits in that space. So the Washoe Museum, we have our Old Town exhibit, and it kind of looks at life kind of at the turn of the century. It's currently closed only because we're getting a new roof put on, which with all this snow that's going on today, I think they're happy that I believe they're finished with it now. So that exhibit space will be reopening soon, and people can go in the great hall there and kind of learn about the computer history in Minnesota and some of the other exhibits in that space. And then one of our other sites is the Leduc Estate. That one's located in Hastings, and that site is open to the public as well by appointment only. I believe we just finished our general tour season with COVID. We opened by appointment only rather than just drop-in tours. And that site does have a few opportunities left for in-person visits. We have our candlelit tours coming up, so if anyone's interested in the Victorian spiritualism and seances and some kind of that paranormal, that's a good opportunity, and I believe our site supervisor, Mariah, has been on to talk with you about that already. And then our third historic site is the Sibley site, and that's located in Mendota, Minnesota. And with that site, it has three different houses that you get a tour of, starting with the Hippolyte Dupuy House, and then the Henry Sibley House, and Jean-Baptiste Faribault. And looking at a lot of the early history, kind of the pioneer in the fur trade era. And that site, due to COVID, we didn't reopen that site this year, but we did do some outdoor programs at it. And we're hoping and looking forward to 2021, and our fingers are crossed we're going to be able to reopen all of our sites as normal. But in the meantime, we have a lot of additional programming that we've been doing virtually. So,
Matt, how involved is the board as far as making decisions about how you open or you don't open? Or is that something, do you follow the Minnesota Historical Society guidelines? Where do you get your directives from, please?
Yeah, so it's a little bit of everything. You know, with COVID, it hasn't been something that there's been a real precedent that was set. So our organization, we worked with the board, our staff, in coming up with a preparedness plan. And we kind of modeled that off of what Dakota County has put together, as well as kind of following what the Minnesota Historical Society did for their site. So the Minnesota Historical Society, that we're completely separate organizations and entities, but we're fortunate to have a really good working relationship with them, especially because they own the Sibley site that we operate in partnership with them. So we're able to bounce ideas off them. And so we were able to kind of see what they were doing. And I know a lot of other historic organizations throughout the state, you know, as COVID hit, didn't really know what steps to take and what was going to be the plan moving forward. So they kind of, you know, followed what the Minnesota Historical Society did. And, you know, when they started closing their sites, other organizations did something similar, and we did the same. And as far as reopening, we kind of followed what they did with, you know, their guidelines for trying to stay outdoors as much as possible. And we developed some of our outdoor programs. We've done a few of those with outdoor movie theater at all three of our sites, kind of a a take on the drive-in movie so that way we can socially distance. And then once we did reopen our sites, you know, again, we worked with Dakota County, and when we put our plan together, we kind of sent that over for them to review and just make sure there wasn't anything that we were really missing. So we were fortunate to be able to kind of bounce ideas off of a number of different entities from the county itself, our board.
So,
and I have to say, I think Matt has done a great job with getting through all of this and figuring out events that people can do, even if it's not something that we can do in person. There's been so many virtual events as well.
You know, that's been kind of a blessing that's come out of this, is perhaps it's opened up an opportunity for people to, quote-unquote, attend something that they might not have if they had to get in their car.
We're really thinking outside the box,
mm-hmm.
and we're doing it because we have to right now, but I really think there's some great ideas here that we will probably be able to continue using even after things have opened up. I'm actually on the events committee, but Matt and his team have been able to pull so many things together that I really haven't done anything because they're doing so many good virtual events. Anyone that has been able to come out, like you said, to the movie nights, that was out on the lawns at all three sites, and it was just a great time there too, socially distanced. Everyone just had a good time with it.
Let's talk about some of the virtual events that you have had. You had the movies, and I know you have some really exciting things coming up, and one of them actually is going to be on October 22nd, Thursday. It's a free virtual event, and it's called Discovering Minnesota Baseball, Tony Stone.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
So I did not know who Tony Stone was. It's a fascinating story. Where did this...
It really is.
Yeah, where did this idea come from, please?
Well, I don't know how many people are aware of it, but Minnesota has actually had a baseball history since 1857. And that very first baseball game and very first baseball organization was right in Nininger, which is right next to us. So we are kind of the birthplace of Minnesota baseball. So we've had a long history with baseball. And Matt, the executive director, is also very into vintage baseball, which plays by 1860 baseball rules. And so by combining those two things, it was just a natural to be able to do some programming on baseball. Right now, the World Series starts tonight. It's a good timing for it, even if our outside weather doesn't support it.
Who wants to tell us about Tony Stone?
Yeah, I'll start by going back a little bit, one step back about the virtual programs. We've been fortunate that we were able to get a grant from the Union Pacific Foundation that offered a COVID relief grant, and through that we've been able to offer, we've done over 30 virtual programs, and with that we have had more than 650 people from 30 different states register for our events. And ideally we'd be in person and wouldn't have to deal with COVID, but it's given us an opportunity. And I heard Maria allude to it a little bit, that we've been able to do these virtual programs, and it's been great for the organization as a way to expand our outreach. And one of those programs that, you know, that you just mentioned coming up is the one on Tony Stone. And I started in the Dunn County Historical Society in Menominee, Wisconsin, and we were doing a baseball exhibit on Black barnstorming baseball teams. And in the 1930s, I came across an article that talked about a woman that traveled with the Twin City Colored Giants, was their name. They were a team in the 1930s that kind of took their name from an earlier team, the Twin City Colored Gophers or the St. Paul Colored Gophers, that played in the early 1900s and late 1800s. And they developed this traveling barnstorming team that she played on when she started playing when she was 17 years old. And the story is that she would go to the baseball field in St. Paul and watch these teams practice and play. And she kind of pestered the coach to let her give it a try. And eventually she was able to, I don't know if you'd necessarily call it a tryout. And I'm hoping we'll be able to get more information on that through the presentation. But she joined the team and she started traveling with these grown men all across the country as a 17-year-old woman playing on this baseball team, and she actually came to Menominee, Wisconsin, to actually one of the surrounding communities. It was Connorsville, tiny unincorporated town, and they kind of played literally in the middle of a cornfield. And she played against another gentleman who was on the Connorsville team named Andy Pasco. And it's a fascinating, if anyone is familiar, he went on to be a Major League Baseball player. So he played at, both of them were about 17 years old at the time. And you know, it's just fascinating how she became the first woman in the Negro Leagues to play professionally there while he was a Major League Baseball player himself. So it's just a fascinating story. And the author of the book Curveball, Martha Ackman, will be presenting on her book and kind of sharing some more of those details about Toni Stone's life.
So did Toni Stone pretend she was a boy to, or did they know she was a woman when she participated?
No, she did not pretend. And actually, she went by the nickname Tomboy because, you know, again, they knew she was a woman, and they had her, again, nicknamed Tomboy for her willingness and want to play baseball. So, you know, some people, you would probably recognize the name of Tomboy Stone because that was another name she went by. But and her name was actually Marcenia Lyle-Berga, or Stone, at first, and then she got married. So her real name was Marcenia. So, yeah, it's just another, again, fascinating piece to that story of Toni Stone.
And what does the term barnstorming mean, please?
Yeah, so barnstorming, the barnstorming era was roughly about the 1880s to the 1950s. And that was when baseball teams, white, you know, and black teams did it, but mostly black teams because that was the way they could play competitive baseball. So in the 1880s, when the gentleman's agreement came into play and Major League or professional baseball teams no longer signed African-American players to professional contracts, they started barnstorming. They would form all-black baseball teams, and they would travel around the country playing local town ball or community teams. And I believe that kind of originated from barnstorming, and it had something to do with, like, early plays that were being put on in barns. And that was kind of where that term originated. They would travel and put these plays or acts on, and that's what the term originated from. And then with baseball, they kind of took that on as the barnstorming.
It's really a fascinating story, and it'll be fun to hear the author of the book, Curveball. It'll be interesting to listen to Martha Ackman tell us more about Toni. Maria, I know you to be a big baseball fan. Had you ever heard of Toni Stone?
Yes, I had, but I didn't know much about her. I had come across the name, and it is very interesting. I actually am registered for the virtual meet, so I can't wait to learn more about her.
So you mentioned registration. Explain how we can participate in this, please.
Yeah, so if you're interested in this presentation or the next one that's coming up on October 29th about town ball parks of Minnesota, the author of that book will be presenting as well. You can go to our website. It's dakotahistory.org. And at the very top of the page, there's what appears to be an icon of a little calendar. And if you click on that, that'll give you all of the events that we have for all of our sites. And again, all of them, for the most part, are virtual. So you can click on those links, learn more about the events, and then at the bottom of the page, you can go ahead and register. And as you mentioned, Mo, the events are free to the public for the most part. All of these virtual events that are part of the Union Pacific Foundation grants are offered free to the public. That was one of the things that we said we would do with that grant application, is we'd offer these programs for free. And, you know, again, so far we've had great turnout and a lot of success with it.
Tell us more about the October 29th event, which focuses on town ball. I know what it means, but what does it mean to both of you, please?
Yeah, so Town Ball Parks of Minnesota is a book that was written a couple of years ago. And the author's name is Todd Mueller, and he presents this book. He said it's kind of slowed down a little bit, mainly because the book is no longer in print, but there's still a demand for it. So he goes back and forth on whether or not he should publish more. But town ball is kind of like that local baseball, the community baseball that the local towns throughout Minnesota, and I believe that there's about 300 different teams across the state.
Oh, wow. We think of Hastings has a team, the Hawks, Meesville Mud Hens.
In Dakota County, there's the Hastings Hawks, the Meesville Mud Hens, the Hampton Cardinals, the Randolph Railcats, Egan Bandits, and Burnsville Bobcats.
That's pretty impressive. So his book actually is going to be read, and you're going to talk about that, and that's called Town Ball Parks. And again, that event is Thursday, October 29th, starting at 6:30 p.m., and the same sort of registration, right?
That's correct, yep.
So this will take us into a link for a Zoom meeting, is that correct?
Yeah, so once you register, you'll get a confirmation email right away that, you know, says you've been your order, your registration's been placed, and then we will send out a link to all of those that have registered, and we try and record as many of the presentations as we can and put them on our YouTube channel. So if anyone's interested, you can go to our YouTube channel. Just go to YouTube, search Dakota County Historical Society, and you can find some of our other programs that we've recorded previously. So we're hoping to do the same thing with these because there's a lot of people that are interested. And then, you know, if they aren't able to attend, they'll still get a chance to view it at some point.
We love that, but we do have an opportunity to attend. So do visit DakotaHistory.org, and you can click on the tabs and sign up for these two events. Thank you so much, Matt Carter. He's the executive director of the Dakota County Historical Society. And Maria Terras, she is a board member of the society. She's also the events committee person for the Dakota County Historical Society. Thank you both. And you are listening to another edition of Community in Depth on AM 1460 and FM 97.7 KDWA in Hastings.